my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 469, to be broadcast Wednesday, January 21st on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's back there somewhere. If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment and she or I might be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here below. If you're listening on an audio file, you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. Well, here's a fun one. Instead of cracking down on dangerous drivers, you can see where we're going here, right? Phoenix is cracking down on endangered pedestrians. Police will no longer give warnings for jaywalking. They're going to hand out citations instead. Really? Really? Don't solve the problem. Just create a bigger one. That's a great idea. All right. On a positive side, we'll move on. We'll do maybe a little more of that in the show. How's that New Year's resolution going? So I keep talking about this because I started out the new year with New Year's resolutions, right? So I always ask, how's your New Year's resolution going? Are you doing what you thought you were going to be doing? By the way, 48% of people surveyed say that their improved fitness is what they're looking for. 38% say improved finance. 36% say improved mental health. Lose weight is 34%, and improved diet is 32%. Well, you can do almost all of those things, except for improving your finances, that's questionable, by just riding your bike. So, hey, we're there already. We're doing the right thing, right? Beautiful. So I have a piece that I will reflect upon here from Forbes magazine, which was interesting. And it starts with, and I'll just give a basic, how long does the average New Year's resolution last? And if you find yourself at the camp of lofty goals and the new year is upon you and you find yourself falling off the wagon just months or weeks later, rest assured, you're not alone. In fact, falling off a New Year's resolution is so common that there's even a slew of unofficial dates commemorating such failures. Some sources cite ditch your New Year's resolution day, quote unquote, as January 17th. While others denote the second Friday in January as Quitter's Day. The Forbes, we have a Forbes Health One Poll survey, and I will talk a little bit about this later in the show, but only 8% of respondents tend to stick to their goals for 1 month, while 22% last 2 months, and 22% last 3 months, and 13% last 4 months. Where are you at? All right. Well, if you're a dedicated Bicycle Talk listener, I'm sure you're sticking to your goals because, you know, you're riding your bike and it's fun. And why not? You know, I'm also going to go over this in this episode, the best bicycle festivals worth traveling to in 2026. Kind of a neat thing. If you're looking for something to enhance your to-do box checklist, and you're looking for maybe a festival to go to of some sort that's bicycle related, we got some good stuff here for you. And we also have the best new U.S. bike lanes of 2025, which was last year, but it is still, we're just barely into this year. So, more in the show. Mechanical Minute and Bike Tips. Still dealing with the cervical fusion blues, of course. The continued update is it's just not comfortable to sit on a bike. I've made some corrections on, well, corrections, modifications, we'll call them, on a couple of my bikes so far. One of them was already in, well, they're both actually upright bar bikes because one of them was that hybrid, which I had all fixed up and I talked about last week. And I put a stem that looks ridiculous on it, but it puts me up into a higher position. And I actually rode it around the yard just to see if it would work okay for me. And it seems all right. So that's good. And then my old single speed, which I had changed over to a flat bar bike for various reasons. My old single speed cross bike, I had put bar ends on that too, so I'd have a bar end position to ride with. And also I have a rack on the back of that. I was kind of using it as a commuter bike because I can commute into the town next door here, Willimantic. I can commute in there on the rail trail, and all I really need is a single speed bike. I just need one speed. That bike actually has both a freewheel and a fixie option on it. So I'm probably going to use that for spring training. I think as I get out more, I'm going to actually start using the fixie because I know it'll be really good for me. But that's another story. What I did was I took those lovely bar ends and I turned them up and voila, I am sitting straight up. I look ridiculous, but you know what? My neck doesn't hurt. So the idea here is to get back in shape, deal with the neck later. But right now I need to get myself back in shape. And I really don't care what I look like on the bike. I care more about how I can get stronger on my bike, including gym work, which I am also doing now, and also starting to see some improvements already. So we'll see. Talk a little bit more about that in a bit. One of those things that I'm doing, and Fran also is doing, and there are a number of reasons to do this, is I'm doing something called wall sits. And if you don't know what a wall sit is, we're going to talk about that today. Because wall sits are great for quadricep strengthening, and they really primarily target the quadriceps, which are the essentials of your cycling power. Improved endurance, holding a wall sit position helps build muscular endurance, crucial for long rides. Core stability, engaging the core during wall sits improves overall stability and balance. That's good. As we get older, balance is a good thing. Injury prevention, strengthens leg muscles, can reduce the risk of cycling-related injuries. So I have a little piece on that too, which we will go over today, which I think is going to be very good. And let's see, I think that's where we're going to go right now, actually. Let's see. Well, yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. We'll get there. We'll get there. Our wall sits are sitting here. So how do wall sits contribute to the rider's leg strength? They're an effective exercise for enhancing a rider's leg strength by engaging key muscle groups used in cycling. The isometric exercise targets the quadriceps, hamstrings, glutes, and calves, providing a solid foundation for improving endurance and power on the bike. Here's the beauty of this. You don't need any equipment for this. You need your body and you need a wall. And that's basically all you really need. What are wall sits and how do they benefit? They simply, they're simple yet powerful exercise that improves sitting, involves sitting against the wall with your knees bent in a 90 degree angle, kind of like you're sitting in an invisible chair. The position is held for a set period, typically ranging from 30 seconds to several minutes. Ouch. Anyway, I'm not there yet. The primary benefit of wall sits for cyclists is the isometric strengthening of the lower body, which is crucial for maintaining stamina and power during rides. So key benefits, quadriceps strengthening. They target the quads and they're essential for your cycling power, your pedaling power. Improved endurance, holding a seated position helps build muscular endurance. good for those long rides. Core stability. Engaging the core during a wall sit improves overall stability and balance, and of course, injury prevention. All there. How do you do it correctly? That's the big thing. Well, if you have someone nearby that can look at you when you're doing it, I would say that that would be good to ask for their assistance, just to make sure you're doing it right. They'll be able to see exactly what you're looking for. You want your knees bent at 90 degrees. By the way, this does not put strain on your knees like it would if you were lifting weights or pushing heavy weights with at the gym. So that is kind of a real beauty to the wall sit. It's so simple. So you stand with your back flat against the wall, feet shoulder width apart, and you slowly slide down into that seated position. Remember, invisible chair. Think invisible chair. Okay? You're getting a 90-degree angle at your knees, and you engage your core by keeping your back straight and your core engaged to maintain your balance, and you hold the position. If you start with 20 or 30 seconds and gradually increase the duration as you build strength, that's a great starting point right there. And of course, you breathe. You maintain steady breathing throughout the exercise. And tips for maximizing this: to increase the duration, gradually increase the time you hold the position to build your endurance. Add variations. You can incorporate single leg wall sits, no thank you, or add weights to challenge your muscles further, no thank you again. But you can do that. You can hold on to a heavy weight, a dumbbell or something like that would work in this situation. Again, let's just start with the basics here. Just do the basics. Time is definitely the way to go. Consistency is key. Perform wall sits regularly, ideally 2 to 3 times a week for your optimum results. Okay, the idea here is to set yourself up with some sort of a chart where you have, you write down how many you're doing each day as you're doing them. Like I said, start out easy. Start out maybe doing 5 of them at 20 seconds at a time. And in between that, you want to take up to a minute off between each of these that you do. So again, that really kind of depends on the person. Everyone is going to be different. But I would say this is definitely something you want to pay attention to as far as time, and go at it easy. Baby steps, baby steps. So maybe your first week you're going to do 5 of them. You're gonna do it maybe 2 days a week. Okay, pick like a Tuesday, a Thursday sort of thing, whatever, however your week works out. I would definitely put a day off in between them if I were you. And just go through the interval practice. As you get better at it, you'll be able to do them longer, or you'll be able to do more of them. And that is what you want to kind of focus on. So it's really, really good to write everything down or have some sort of a way of recording it. Maybe you can record it on your phone or in your computer or whatever it is that you use for reference for that sort of thing. Maybe you want to print yourself up a spreadsheet and a chart and just put little X's in the boxes as you complete the exercise each day. So these are things that I think you're going to find very, very beneficial for strengthening your legs. I'm already starting to see improvements, and I'm not doing it that much right now. I will continue to do more. I've also been using the leg press at the gym. I will say that that is another way of doing it, but that's a little harder on your knees, and it's a lot harder on your lower back. So you do have to be careful about certain things. And you can go anywhere from, you know, beginner to intermediate to, you know, experienced as far as this goes. There's other exercises you can do for cyclists, like squats and lunges and calf raises. Your squats enhance overall leg strength and power. Lunges improve balance and flexibility. Calf raises strengthen calves for better pedal stroke efficiency. So anyway, how often should you do them? 2 to 3 times a week. That's really good. Can a beginner start with a wall sit? Of course. Of course you can. And once again, numbers are key here. You're not out to win the Tour de France here. We're just out to get your legs back in shape so that they start feeling a little bit stronger and you feel more confident when you do have to apply a lot of pressure on them, like climbing a hill, that sort of thing. So wall sits are great for that. Common mistakes to avoid during wall sits. Not maintaining that 90-degree angle at the knees, arching the back, holding your breath, don't hold your breath, ensure correct form and breathing steadily can prevent these errors from happening. Do wall sits help when you're climbing hills? Of course they do. They can improve your leg strength, your endurance, which are both crucial for climbing hills. Strong quadriceps, increased stamina make uphill cycling more manageable. Are wall sits better than squats for cyclists? Good question. Wall sits and squats serve different purposes. Wall sits are excellent for building endurance and stabilizing muscles, while squats are better for developing explosive power. Combining both in a training regime can offer comprehensive benefits. So, the conclusion is that incorporating wall sits into a cyclist training routine can significantly enhance your leg strength, your endurance, your overall cycling performance. By considering practicing this simple yet effective exercise, riders can enjoy improved power output, greater efficiency, and reduced injury risk. For optimum results, combine wall sits with other leg strengthening exercises like squats and lunges, and start today. There you go. There's part of your New Year's resolution. Let's do some wall sits. Anyway, I will continually report back to you on how my wall sits are going. And it's a matter of me keeping my brain involved in this in the midst of all the other things that I'm doing. I do still teach indoor cycling six days a week. So I've got a lot of time that I spend on the bike. I was really smart today and I got on the bike and I kept it in zone 2 the entire time. So I let my legs recover from what I did to them yesterday, which was an hour and a half on the bike, which is longer than I would normally ride an indoor bicycle. But I was teaching a class, which we call extreme spin, and that requires 90 minutes of work. So, it's winter. It's time to get back in shape. The other thing about winter, and for those of you who experience it, not those of you down in Florida or Arizona or San Diego or wherever you are where it's incredibly warm all the time, this is a great time to focus on your form when you're riding on your bike. So you can do form focus while sitting on an indoor bike or on a trainer of some sort, because it will give you the ability to focus on dropping your elbows, dropping your shoulders, keeping your hands loose on the handlebars, to basically keep too much strain. I don't know why we don't have audio on you, Kevin, because I think it's still working. Anyway, the idea here is that you want to really focus on the best position that you can be in while you are sitting on your bicycle. You want to be comfortable. You want to be on the bike. You want to be comfortable. So relaxing, or like I like to tell people, remember the number one thing you never do while riding your bicycle, and that is you do not fight with your bike. And the reason you don't fight with your bike is because your bicycle will always win. So learn how to get more comfortable on your bike. Work with that. Work on your cadence. I did a great cadence drill class last week. We didn't go any harder than what most people, if you're into training on your bike, it would be called your FTP, your fitness threshold. And so I'm talking 75 to 78% of your max as far as heart rate goes and perceived effort goes. And all we did from that point without adding any more resistance was added RPMs. So we did some spin drills anywhere from 15 seconds up to 30 seconds at a time. And I got to tell you, you will get the wattage out of that. You will get the cardio out of that. And I found myself spending a lot of time climbing right into zone four while doing that. So, and I didn't apply any extra pressure on the pedals. And that's a lot kinder to your knees. It's really good for building your cycling endurance. It's a really, really great way to do it. And also, at the same time, you're holding that nice relaxed position. If you should happen to have, and there are those of us old school guys out there that do have these things, a good set of rollers. Rollers are, in many people's world, the impossible thing to ride on, because all it is a 16-inch wide roller underneath your wheels, and you have to balance on this thing. They're incredibly, incredibly instructive to teaching you proper cycling technique, because if you don't do it, you'll just slide right off of them. So you have to learn how to be smoother, more comfortable, more relaxed on the bike. There's a lot of benefits to them. And I will not ever give up on my rollers. They're hanging in my garage right now, but they're still there should I decide that I want to work on some better cycling skill, because they do make a huge, huge difference. If you are an off-road rider and you have some issues with balance and control when you get into really tricky situations, the rollers, man, I'm telling you, the rollers are the answer. And I know it's an entirely different discipline, but it really, really does help. So there's a lot of things you can do, but we're gonna focus. Right now, I'm focusing primarily on my strength, because I lost a lot of strength when I had this last surgery done, and way before I had this last surgery done. I was starting to lose tremendous amounts of muscle strength, and my ability to climb and all my muscular endurance was just getting flushed down the toilet because of the problem that I was having with my neck. So until I got that fixed, that was a problem. That was definitely a problem. So anyway, we're going to move on to the next little segment here in the show, and let's go on to some fun stuff. So, how long does that New Year's resolution last? Yeah, well, you know, it's a tough one. And New Year's resolutions, I try to tell people not to get caught up in them. I especially tell people not to get caught up into miles. Miles are really, you're looking at a really serious trap if you're going after miles. If you rode 8,000 miles last year and you want to do 9,000 miles this year, you're going to set yourself up for disappointment. Anything can happen that can change that. I tend to like to instruct people more about hours than I do about miles. Hours in the saddle make a difference. Let's say, for instance, you are living in a climate like we live in here, and that climate is very cold in the wintertime. Going out and riding your bicycle and putting in 15 or 20 miles is a lot of difficulty because of the weather factor. But putting 90 minutes or 30 or 60 minutes in on your bicycle on the indoor trainer gives you the hours you're looking for. Hours add up, and hours do make a difference. So I'm a real big believer in not getting caught up in the mileage thing and just using time spent in the saddle as the factor. Because there may be a day that you have a really, really nice day. We're not going to have any of those for a while. We're going back down into the sub-zeros here. And that's just not pleasant. So it's going to be strictly indoor training. But let's say the weather gets nice and you have a chance to go out and spin out on your bike for an hour or maybe an hour and a half. That's time. It's not miles, it's time. Put the miles behind you. Put the time in the saddle right there where you want to be. To give you an example, I would also include, if I was unable to ride my bicycle and I needed to get some fresh air because I really, really needed to get out, and I could go out and I could snowshoe or cross-country ski or even just go for a walk, it's hours. Once again, put the time down. The time does add up. The time does matter. And again, back to an example on that, I usually get on my bicycle, on my road bicycle, rubber to the road, with about 80 or 90 hours of indoor cycling under my belt before I even get my tires to hit the road. It's a lot of time. It's an awful lot of time, and it pays off. Now, I'll be honest with you. The first couple of rides, they feel like I haven't been on my bike for a long, long time, because it's a real rude awakening when you actually get out on a real bike and ride on the road. There's nothing that substitutes that. There's no question about it. But the ability to get yourself back into your groove and to get your muscle memory kicking in again and to have that cardiovascular fitness behind you, it all comes very, very quickly if you put in the hours. So it's all about the time. So, you know, there's a lot of things you can do, but you kind of have to play little games if you must to get yourself going. I had a woman who took my class yesterday. She said she hates cardio. There you go. That's a good, strong statement, right? Then there are those of us that, you know, crave it. And we just want to be out there breathing hard, working hard, and feeling really good about ourselves. Well, there's a lot of people that don't want to do that. I noticed that she was very, very strong, and she looked pretty good on the bike, but she said she just doesn't. She said at about 30 minutes, she was ready to give up. Of course, she chose my longest class to participate in, but she was determined, and so she stuck it out. And I talked to her about her dislike of the cardio. And I said, you know, I can see you're very, very strong. Let's consider not using quite as big a gear or as much resistance, and just really try to focus on turning those legs over a little bit faster. And just make it so it's not so demanding on your body on that end. And just kind of work on getting more comfortable with breathing. So she agreed that she would give it a try. And she had done a drop-in yesterday, and she said she was signing up for the class. So she was definitely hooked on what she saw and what she did. Of course, we have a really good class of people that I have quite a few people that are outdoor cyclists that take that class, and there's lots of chatter and conversation going on while we're working really hard. And so it's very friendly, I would say, in many, many ways. And that's another way that you can stay focused on the New Year's resolution and not getting yourself in the drop-off train. You don't want to do that. So 55% of people that were surveyed say that physical and mental health are of equal importance. I totally agree. And I tell people this all the time. When my hands are on the handlebars and the road is moving underneath me, the world is right. And that's a kind of a perfect and beautiful thing. And it's not just physical, it's also mental. There's a lot of mental involved here. 36% of women and 36% of men equally cite improved mental health as a top resolution. However, women are more likely to focus on fitness, 52%, compared to men at 42%. 20% of respondents say they keep themselves accountable when it comes to sticking to their goals. That was a massive drop compared to the previous year's survey, which was 77% said they would keep themselves accountable. So it comes and it goes. Depends on what's going on in your life. It depends what's going on in the world. I'll make a light statement there. Try to make it a light statement. Overall, 80% of respondents feel confident in their ability to reach goals, and only 6% lack this confidence. And men are slightly more confident at 82% than women at 79% in their ability to reach their goals. 49% plan on using a fitness app for assistance in sticking to their resolutions. Great idea. Great, great idea. Fitness apps, there are so many of them out there. Some of your cell phones, your regular smartphones that everyone's walking around with in their pocket, some of them just come with fitness apps that are free to use. Well, maybe not free to use because you had to buy the cell phone. But anyway, that it makes it even easier to get yourself involved in programs. Diet programs are popular, 46%, gym memberships, 43%, habit tracking apps at 40%, diet calorie counter apps at 33%, and meditation apps at 33%. 86% of respondents say their New Year's resolution will have a positive impact beyond 2025, 29% say their resolutions will have a positive impact for 1 to 2 years, and 57% believe it'll have an impact for 3 years or more. So there it is, New Year's resolutions. How many people make them? A lot of people make them. 37% of Americans say that they have goals or resolutions they want to achieve. 87% said they were very or somewhat likely to keep it through the year. That doesn't work, by the way. We at the gym refer to the folks that show up that we haven't seen in a long time or are new to the scene as the resolutionists. And we kind of joke around about Viva la Resolution. Not to be discouraging, but I probably see of the people that do come in and take my classes and stick with my classes, I would say if it's a new person, it's probably 10% or less that stick with it. I also have a tremendous following of people that never gave up and they're still coming to the classes and they will continue to come to the classes. If I can keep 10%, I feel like I'm doing well. So that's not such a bad thing. And of course, the way you do that is you got to make it fun, and fun can be achieved by the mood of the class being, you know, the people that are in the class are chattering with one another and encouraging others in the class, putting a workout together that gets other riders to encourage other riders. That's another way of doing it. I did that yesterday. Good music. There's nothing to be said. You just can't say enough about good music. Good music really does help. And so, you know, there are ways to keep yourself going and keep your resolution and your goals going. And let's hope you don't run into the ditch the New Year's resolution day as January 17th or denote the second Friday in January as Quitter's Day. Let's not be one of those, okay? And if you really want to get back on your bike and do some really cool stuff, we're going to talk about that also in the show today. So let's look at that and look at goals of which you might have for the year. One of my first and major goals is to get to do a gravel ride in late March, where I help out my friend Richard Fries with the Quiet Corner Epic. I don't know, Quiet Corner. I think that's what it's called. Anyway, it's a lovely dirt road ride. It's a combination of dirt roads and Natchog Epic. I'm sorry. Combination of dirt roads and paved roads in northeastern Connecticut with very, very few cars. Some unbelievably challenging dirt sections on it. And various distances. I generally stick to the shorter distances because that's where I help out. Plus, I also do some announcing work for him there. But I am looking forward to the end of March to be in good enough shape to be able to accomplish that this year. So, and then I have another ride coming up a few months later, or maybe a month and a half later, called the Best Buddies Ride, which I really, really strongly encourage you getting involved with. It's an awesome ride, and it can be as long as 100 miles, it can be as short as 20 miles, and it starts at the 100-mile ride, starts at the Kennedy Center in Boston. It finishes at Craigsville Beach on the Cape, and it's extremely well supported. There are over 100 what we call domestiques or helpers of the ride to help keep you encouraged and motivated and make it to the finish. It's just one of the best organized rides I've ever been on. And I get that same information from those who have participated in the past. So that's a cool ride. I definitely want to be available for that this year. I definitely want to be available for the Farm to Fork Fondos again this year. There's a lot, and not to mention my local club rides. I haven't led a local club ride in how long, Fran? Probably over a year, maybe 2 years, wow, since I've actually been able to truly lead a club ride. And I'm feeling pretty bad about that, but I'm going to take care of it. I've got some goals, and I've got some motivation here, and I'm going to make it all happen. And if you're looking for the best things to do as far as rides go, I have a list here of the best bicycle festivals worth traveling to in 2026. Okay, this is kind of fun. First and foremost, number one on the top of the list, I talk about it every year on the show, the Sea Otter Classic in Monterey, California. It's April 16th through the 19th, and it's known as the Woodstock of cycling, and it remains one of the biggest and most celebrated cycling festivals in North America. Held in the scenic coastal town of Monterey, California, it attracts cyclists from every discipline, road, mountain, gravel, and BMX, with races, group rides, and expansive expo showcasing the latest bike gear, a lively festival atmosphere. There's something for every cycling enthusiast. Don't miss the iconic Sea Otter Parade, where participants dress in wild costumes and join the fun with a social ride around town. Whether you're there to race or spectate or just geek out on the latest bikes, Sea Otter is a must-attend for any cyclist. I've been to the Sea Otter a couple of times with the industry because I was in the cycling industry for 44 years, and I can tell you there's just a really good feel out there. There's a really good energy. It's a lot of fun. And it's probably one of the largest consumer bicycle shows that you're going to find in the United States, other than CABDA, which has a consumer day with their bicycle show that was primarily set up for bike dealers. So anyway, definitely worth going to. Eurobike in Europe, the world's largest, most influential cycling trade show, attracted cycling professionals and enthusiasts from all over the globe. And that is held in Friedrichshafen, Germany, and is the place to see the future of cycling technology, from electric bikes to cutting edge components. And I do believe they have a consumer day there too. So it's not just for industry people. Go Bike Festival in Montreal, Canada. Oh, by the way, Eurobike is June 24th to the 27th. Go Bike Festival Montreal, Canada is May 24th through the 31st. And it is one of Canada's premier urban cycling celebrations, drawing tens of thousands of riders to explore the city's diverse bike-friendly routes and urban landscape. The festival takes place each May and offers full weekend events that showcase Montreal's vibrant cycling culture. Highlights include mass participation rides, urban cycling challenges, and family-friendly activities. There's a signature event that closes off major roads to cars, offering riders a chance to cruise 50 kilometers through some of the city's most scenic areas, from elite cyclists to casual riders. Go Bike Montreal Festival is something for everyone. So, number four on the list, Unbound Gravel. Yeah, Unbound. I know a lot of people that do Unbound. This is a toughie, all right? It was formerly known as, I believe, the Dirty Kwanzaa. And it is a major gravel enthusiast. It's a 200.
Dirty Kanza.
Yeah, dirty Kanza. Yeah, it is a 200-mile bicycle race on dirt roads. And it is in the Midwest, and it's in Emporia, Kansas. It's May 28th to the 31st. I've talked to a number of people that have done it. My friend Will is one of those guys. And also, we've got our 70-year-old cyclocross national champion, Dave Rustico, I believe, has done this also. It's not for the faint of heart or that of someone who is not fit, because it's a very, very hard ride. Challenging, rewarding experience. So maybe you want to put that on your list. There's Made Bike, made.bike in Portland, Oregon. And that is August 21st through the 23rd. And it is a multi-day trade and consumer bike show that brings together the best of the cycling world. It's a celebration of independent bike builders, small manufacturers, and all things handcrafted in the bicycle industry. We had this show in Hartford a number of years ago, and I actually had them on the show. So that was kind of a cool thing. Number six on the list, May 3rd, 2026. Fran knows this one. It's the TD Five Borough Type Bike Tour in New York
Yeah.
City. Yeah, the Five Borough Tour, New York City's largest cycling event and one of the most iconic in the U.S. every year. Tens of thousands of riders, let's put that up to around 30,000, I believe, ride 40 miles through five boroughs, Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, Bronx, and Staten Island, on a car-free route. Yeah, they close the roads. Can you believe it? New York City. Probably the busiest city in the United States, they close the roads for bicycles. It's really cool. If you've never done it before, I highly encourage it. Do not plan on going out and competing in it because it's not that kind of ride. And it is very, very busy with bicycles. Not with cars, but with bicycles.
You stop every 10
So
miles
you
or
stop,
less.
yeah, you probably stop every 10 miles
And it has
from
lots
one
of
park to
sponsors
another park. You're going to
and
have to get
good
closer
food.
To the mic for me, Franny, if you're going to talk. It is a it's a spectacular event if you've never done it before. I've done it once. Fran has done it once.
Yes.
I don't know if I will do it again. I like the fact that I had the experience of doing it. It's just a little too crowded for me. But it's cool. If you've never done it before, it's definitely something to do. Number seven on the list. In beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon, there is Pedapalooza. Yes, Pedapalooza is the ultimate bike party, and there's nothing quite like it. Why? Because it's in Portland, of course.
Keep Portland weird.
It's the month-long celebration of cycling that takes place every summer in Portland, Oregon. It's a perfect festival for riders of all levels. Pedapalooza offers hundreds of free bike events, from group rides to in-bike movies, scavenger hunts, and even bike polo tournaments. The emphasis is on fun and community, with riders dressing up in wild costumes and exploring the city together. Whether you're an experienced rider or just someone who loves the social side of cycling, Pedapalooza is one of the most laid-back, fun bicycling festivals you will experience in 2026. The International Cargo Bike Festival in Utrecht, Netherlands. You say that one. Utrecht. I thought I did a pretty good job with it. That's on October 12th and 13th, and that will be the ultimate celebration for cyclists who love the practical and innovative idea behind cargo bikes. And it's a festival that brings together cargo bike enthusiasts, designers, and manufacturers to celebrate the growing trend of utility cycling. Expect a weekend filled with cargo bike races, test rides, workshops, and a showcase of the latest innovations in bike design and sustainable transport. Very cool. Promotes the use of cargo bikes for everything from family transportation to urban logistics, making it a perfect event for those interested in cycling's role in sustainable cities and everyday life. Number nine is Cyclovia in Bogota, Colombia. It's one of the most innovative and forward-thinking cycling events in the world. Since 1974, the Colombian capital has closed its highways to cars every Sunday, opening them up to cyclists, skaters, joggers, and walkers. The incredible event offers a chance to explore the city in a completely car-free environment while promoting a healthier, more sustainable urban mobility. Riders can traverse anywhere from 127 kilometers, that's 79 miles, of car-free roads with food stalls, repair vendors, lively crowds creating a festive atmosphere. In 2026, Bogota will celebrate 50 years of Cyclovia, making the event even more special. Whether you're an avid cyclist or just want to join the thousands of locals, you should come check out Cyclovia in Bogota, Colombia. Very cool. And number 10 on the list, we cannot forget about this one. This is in London in the UK, the World Naked Bike Ride. And it's a daring and fun and peaceful demonstration against car culture aimed at making the vulnerability of cyclists visible. One of the largest WNBR London is held on the second Saturday of June every year, and typically attracts over 10,000 riders, many of whom opt for body paint or creative costumes or no clothing at all. It's fun-filled, slow, easy ride through the streets of London, and the exact route is kept a surprise for logistical reasons. While there is no need to register, participants are encouraged to show up at one of the starting locations and take part in this liberating event that celebrates freedom, sustainability, and body positivity. The atmospheric, electric, and it's just a thrilling way to show solidarity with other cyclists and demonstrate the importance of eco-friendly transportation. There you go. There's your to-do list for 2026. 10 things you might want to throw on the list and, you know, see if it's something you want to do. I like the World Naked Bike Ride idea. Fran, what do you think about the World Naked Bike Ride?
I would do it.
I would definitely do it. It sounds like fun. I haven't done one of those yet, so it would be fun. By the way, those are also in Portland, Oregon.
Right,
those are also in, I think there's a Boston one now too. I think they're all over the world now. So there are a number of naked bike rides. Should you feel like you wish to go out and enjoy the freedom of riding your bicycle with nothing on. By the way, watch your saddle. Ooh, that could be rough. Anyway, moving on, we have a little bit more time left here. The best new U.S. bike lanes of 2025. This was put out by People for Bikes. And we have a list here of some of the greatest improvements that have happened in the bike lane world, and which is really wonderful because we had a lot of sustainable and sustainable transportation money that had been available for a number of years. That's, some of that's drying up right now, but I think that that money is still being used up until the middle of this year. But starting with the waterfront bike lane in Seattle, Washington, you can connect on routes along 2nd and 4th Avenues, and there's going to be a few future extension that will tie directly to the Elliott Bay Trail. So it's a great way to get around Seattle, so kind of an interesting thing. And all the cities are just doing great things. The next thing is the Slauson Rail-to-Trail Active Transportation Corridor in Los Angeles, California. And it's part of a long-planned rail-to-river project. Los Angeles turned its a neglected right-of-way into a shared-use path lined with hundreds of new trees, bioswales, pedestrian-scale lighting, and bike-share stations. The completion of this segment stretches 5.5 miles, and it's accessible route for both recreation and commuting in South Central Los Angeles. West Midway Avenue, Alameda, California, is the next one on the list here. And key part of the redesign was creating a bikeway that feels intuitive and safe for people of all ages. Raising the bikeway and tightening the intersection sends a clear message, people biking and walking around here. So it does have a raised level on it also, which is kind of cool. Chicago has that too. Kingsley Avenue in beautiful downtown Providence, Rhode Island. Yes, right around the corner from us. We're only about 50 miles away from there. The Woonasquatucket River Greenway. Wow, that's a mouthful. Not as big a mouthful as that lake up in Massachusetts. But anyway, Greenway Improvement Project added 1 mile of shared use path along Kingsley Avenue, connecting downtown Providence to nearby Oldieville, closing a missing link in the 7 mile Woonasquatucket River Greenway Project. And it was project by former Providence Mayor George Elorza, and that's Jorge Elorza, and led by the City of Providence in coordination with the Watershed Council. And it added a grade-separated cycle track, traffic calming, and accessible canoe and kayak launch, mini parks, and nature-based stormwater systems adjacent to the existing river. Downtown Providence is a very, very interesting place. It's also one of those places where during certain times of the year, I'm not sure if they do it every Saturday night anymore. They used to. They have these water fires in the canals. They have gondolas. It's like you're in Little Italy. It's crazy cool. And they also do that on New Year's Eve, too. Providence is cool. Hennepin Avenue in Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's ranked as the second largest second best large U.S. city for biking. In People for Bikes 2025 City Rankings, recently completed a $36.7 million overhaul of the Hennepin Avenue South from Westlake Street to Douglas. So that's another one on the list. Wilson Street Corridor, Madison, Wisconsin. These are all these bike-friendly towns. Madison's a big one, too. They have added two-way curb-level cycle track linking the Capital City Trail and the Southwest Path. Structural soil was also added as part of a project to help the new street trees thrive. And it was largely without bike facilities, requiring bikes to occupy the vehicle travel lane on the street, and vehicle speeds and volumes exceeded what was considered comfortable for all ages. So they made a nice bike trail out of it instead. South Main Street, Columbia, South Carolina. And again, Columbia's first sidewalk level protected bike lanes on South Main Street in the State House to the University of South Carolina. The project converted busy five-lane road into a calmer two-lane street featuring raised bike lanes, wider sidewalks, shorter crosswalks, and enhanced landscaping. And first drive in Atlanta, Georgia. Georgia Tech's new bi-directional cycle track on First Drive links Texware with Marietta Street with the 5th Street Complete Streets project in Midtown. Protected bike lanes, very, very nice. Next on my list here is, and we're going to run out of time shortly, Summer Street in Somerville, Massachusetts. If you're familiar with Somerville at all, it is in the greater Boston area, just northwest of Boston. That, I believe, is where MIT is. I think that's actually in Somerville. And they have one of the most complete urban bike networks in the country with city rankings, city rating score of 63 compared to Cambridge's 68 and Boston's 35. City is closing the gap through a strong policy commitment, strategic infrastructure investments, and careful coordination with utility and public works projects. Market Street and the Lynn Way, Lynn, Massachusetts, of all places. I would not have guessed that. Once again, it is very, very close to Somerville. It's in that greater Boston area. And it is also part of the 3,000-mile East Coast Greenway, which is always being worked on. So cool stuff going there. And the honorable mention goes to Smith Road in Tempe, Arizona. where they have improvements along Smith Road and Apache Boulevard, and the project added protected bike lanes and upgraded sidewalks, ADA ramps, etc. So cool stuff. And that is some of the best new U.S. bike routes in the United States. Very, very cool. And we've got more to cover here, but we are running out of time. So I'm going to go run down very, very quickly here. And I want to mention that this past weekend, yesterday, was the world-class cyclocross race in Benidorm. And, of course, in the women's race, I'm going to emphasize the women's race on this one just because there's a really good reason. And one of them is, first of all, Lucinda Brand. She won by 10 seconds over Celine Alvarado, and another 12 seconds over Amandine Fourcoinet. And but I'm going to go down the list here, and in, let's see here, find it. It's down here. In 26th place overall, Alisa Sarkisov of the United States and Competitive Edge Racing, right here out of Massachusetts, was 26th overall. And go down that list just a little bit further, 34th place overall, our very own national champion from Dudley, Massachusetts, Lizzie Gonzalez. So we had some good, really good U.S. representation there. And we also had 5 other U.S. women finish in the top 45. So pretty cool stuff. And that's it. I have run completely out of time. So we are going to move on to finishing points. Give us your opinion. Remember, bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is an easier and safer option for more people because when more people ride bikes, people are happier and healthier. Our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. And I'm going to say it again. It won't be my last time. You need to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. And hey, take the Pedal and Ron Challenge. Park your car or truck one day and use your bicycle instead. You will surprise yourself. And always remember, whether you're driving a car or riding your bike, please be safe and be kind. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can leave a comment down here below, or you can also send me an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, I'm working on that, send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedlin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. Get out!